Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. It's our GRF On The Go podcast, and I'm Evgeny. I'm here with my co-host and my colleague, Trisha. And as always, we're glad to see you all.
We sure are. And so in this episode, we're going to be rebroadcasting one of our most recent webinars. We believe this topic is timely, practical, and something of value for you and your organization.
And that's right. And as always, if you have any questions after this webinar, feel free to reach out to us directly. You'll find our contact information in the show notes. And we always love to hear from our audience. And with that, let's get started.
All right. Welcome. Today's webinar is called Developing Accurate and Flexible Budgets. This is actually part two of a three-part series. I'm not sure how many of you were on all three. So we're on the second one here, and the series is called Developing a Strong Accounting Foundation for Nonprofits. So thanks for joining us today. I'm Eleanor Litwack, and I am a partner in the outsourced accounting team at GRF. I've been at the firm 18 years and have always worked in nonprofit accounting. All three of the presenters today, Leslie, Hannah, and I, are on the outsourced accounting team at GRF. And what we do mostly is run the accounting departments for nonprofits, lots of which includes budgeting and forecasting. So we're excited to share our knowledge with you today. And Leslie, want to give a quick intro?
Sure. Hi, I'm Leslie Zeid. I'm a principal in GRF's outsourced and accounting advisory services. I have a CPA and an MBA, and I have a mixed background between nonprofit and corporate accounting and financial planning and analysis. So I've done budgeting work for several large publicly traded companies, as well as for quite a few nonprofits.
Hi, I'm Hannah Ryu. I am a senior controller working almost exclusively with nonprofits here in our outsourced accounting department. I've been with the firm for over 6 years. And then I am also our lead accounting technology consultant. So I do lots of our implementations for our outsourced clients.
Great. And just a few housekeeping items before we dive into the content. So if anyone needs CPE, you'll get a brief survey when the webinar closes out. So make sure to fill out the survey. There's also three polling questions that just show that you're here and participating. So make sure to participate and those for CPE as well. And on the last slide, you'll have our emails in case you have any questions or anything to follow up on that we didn't cover in the webinar and we might be able to help with. In terms of GRF, for those that aren't familiar with the firm, I know many of you probably are, but for those that are new friends here today, we're a full service CPA firm headquartered in Bethesda, Maryland, which is in the DC area. And we have clients in the DC area, all over the US, and also internationally. We work heavily with nonprofits, and we also have for-profits, government contractors, and other niches that we work with. We've been around for a couple decades. Next year is actually our 45-year anniversary, so that's an exciting hallmark for the firm. But that's just a little bit more about the firm and what we do beyond the outsourced accounting that Hannah, Leslie, and I are involved in day out. With that, we could jump into our content. So we're talking about budgets today, and the way we've structured the agenda is to take you sort of through the budget cycle and the way you might approach it. What you'll find, though, regardless, is that every budget is going to look different. Each of your organizations is different. Your annual cycle is different, your fiscal year might be different, the way you're funded. So these are just general concepts that you could take back and apply it to your organization. But there's no like one size fits all here or a textbook on like, here's how you budget and now we're all ready. So bear with us and make sure to keep it interactive if you have questions or if something's maybe a little different for your organization, we would love to hear about it. But we're going to start with a planning section where we'll talk about general budget concepts and just like the core principles of budgeting and some definitions. Then we'll move into the building blocks, so how you're going to structure your budget. Then calculations, where we'll talk more about how the numbers get there. And then once the numbers are there, how do you communicate your budget? So there's lots of different audiences for a budget. You got your internal team, your board, your funders. What does it mean to each of them? And like, what's the story you're going to tell when you're presenting your budget? What words are you going to use with each audience? And then a little bit about monitoring your budget. That's more of like a whole course in itself, but we'll touch upon it here at the end of the webinar if we have some more time. So with that, it gets us into our first polling question. Curious for those out there, most of you are with nonprofits, who leads your budgeting process? Is it the executive director, like CEO, leader of the organization? Maybe they're creating the whole thing and they're the only ones involved. Is it the finance leader, whether you have a CFO or a finance manager or director of accounting type person? Do you have external accountants like us that lead your budget process? Maybe it's a treasurer. I know for my nonprofit that I'm treasurer of, early on, I had to lead the budget process because there was no one internally to do that. So maybe some of you have that, and then other. So I'll give you a couple seconds here to vote, and then we'll see what the consensus is. All right, looks like most of you have the finance leader that's coordinating the annual budget. A couple people have the CEO doing that, so makes total sense. Nothing surprising there.
So we're gonna go right into planning your budget. And unfortunately, this is not the right slide, so hang for one second. I'm going to go back. So these are some basics you may or may not already know, but we want to make sure we start in the right place. And for anyone who's really new to budgeting, we don't want to just skip over something that you're not familiar with. So one of the things that we would say right off the bat is that you want to budget according to the accounting structure that you currently have in place. You want to match your budgeted accounts to your chart of accounts as closely as you can. If you're looking for higher level budgeting, like a more summarized approach, you want to try and use GL account groups that would match with subtotals or groupings that you're on, that are on your financials. If you're completely new to budgeting and you've never done this before, a great way to start would be to download financials out of your accounting system at a detailed level and just use that as a template. Start right there. One other thing you want to think about when you're planning your budget is you want to align these budgeting buckets or areas with the responsible party or the owners of that. So this is typically dimensional information, but it could also be just specific GL costs. For example, IT might own capital expenditure budgets, HR may own salaries and benefit budgets. So it can really be dimensional or it can be just chart of accounts, but you want to make sure that you're considering who's going to be responsible as well so that you can have their input and they can be managing those costs moving forward. So back to the slide. We thought it might make sense to take a step back and look at various areas or various terms that are used in the budgeting process. So you'll hear these often, and we want to give a little bit of clarity to what each of these are. The budget is just the financial results of planning for your financial activities for an upcoming time period. It's usually 12 months. In the nonprofit world, your budget is typically approved by your board of directors. We hear the term flexible budgets, but it's a little bit of an oxymoron because your budget, once it's approved, is its own thing. You really have just one budget. Scenario planning can be used for developing your budget, but it might also be used for developing forecasts. And this is when you take your budget and you look at the potential for different possibilities. So maybe different revenue forecasting techniques or different expense modeling. Will you hire 5 people? Will you add 10 people? Will you add no new headcount? Those are all scenario plans. It can be used as part of your budget. It can also be used as part of forecasting. So forecasts and projections are once you feel that your budget is unattainable and it really isn't your North Star anymore, it's not really what you're going to move forward with for the remainder of the fiscal year, then you take your budgeting information, your actual results, you look at what's changed in those conditions, and you develop a forecast. Forecasts can be malleable. You can change them because they're not board approved. They can change as conditions change. They can also be longer term. Sometimes you have forecasts and projections that are 3 years out, 5 years out, that help you manage decision making. So a little bit about the difference between those three things. So when you're planning your budgeting, make sure you're really intentional and honest about the purpose of your budget and the timing. You always want to build your budgeting schedule backwards. So what's the board review date? And then how much time is it going to take to step through all the processes up until that date? We've developed a graph or a chart here. It may make sense for you. It might not make sense for you. But what is important to know about this is that it's iterative. You may get to the fourth step, the executive director step, and then go back to the budget owner step to look at changes in your budget. So think of that when you're looking at your timing, that it may take two or three sessions of walking through the budget, rolling it up, passing it along to whoever the final reviewer is, and sending it back to the responsible parties to get to different numbers. The other thing you want to look at is, why are you budgeting? What will your budget be used for? We really recommend to budget for realistic results rather than for aspirational or stretch results. Every organization looks at this a little bit differently, but you should remember, especially if we just saw on the poll, you're the finance director, you're the one leading this budget process. The team is probably looking at you to sort of be the voice of reason. So you really want to try and come up with a budget that is realistic. The crazy part is that no matter how realistic your budget is, it's very possible that you will get to the end of the first quarter and be developing forecasts, because you know, you have to start so early on the budgeting process and things never quite work out the way they're intended. So that's just kind of the hard truth about it.
And you have to always leave that buffer in this timeline, right? So
absolutely.
You're leading up to a board meeting date that you can't move, but the steps might not go according to plan. So you always want to make sure to leave a couple weeks or a couple days for things that didn't quite calculate out the way you thought they would.
Exactly. And I have something written in my notes, which keep disappearing. That's handy. It always takes longer than you think it will. Always. It's never gone faster than I thought it would. Let's put it that way. So here's a polling question for you. How long does your annual budget process typically take? Hopefully, Nathan, you're launching that polling. Is it a few hours? Is it a month or less from start to finish? 2 to 3 months? More to 3 months, or something else, or just not sure?
There's also always this question, Leslie, of like, when do we start the budget? So if you start too early, you might not know enough about what's going to happen next year. But if you start too late, then you don't have enough time. So it's like, finding that
exactly.
Right balance and not being in budgeting mode for 8 to 12.
The whole year. Yeah, like you don't want to be getting to February and be like, okay, it's time for budgeting, because then for sure you're going to be forecasting, because your budget's going to, by the time you get to the next year, the budget will already be unrealistic. But in the same sense, you don't want to give yourself the month of December to do your budget. So 2 to 3 months seems to be the most popular. That's probably what I would have predicted. So I think that's probably a good amount of time.
No one said it takes them just a few hours.
That's a good sign.
Okay, so we'll move on to building your budget. But we don't want to talk about building your budget in a traditional sense. We want to talk about making it strategic, collaborative, and sustainable throughout the year. So we'll talk about budgeting through scenario planning, which Leslie just touched on, but we'll dive a tiny bit deeper. We'll talk about engaging your budget owners and having multiple contributors so that your contributors feel ownership throughout the process. We'll talk about leveraging technology so you can simplify and strengthen the process. So your budget should be more than a spreadsheet. It should be your roadmap for resource allocation, decision-making, and accountability. So we want it to have an end result where you can answer questions like, how can we fund this new initiative? How do we respond if revenue changes mid-year? How are we using resource allocations when where they'll have the most impact? We want overall our budget to tell a story that aligns with the resources of your organization. So starting with scenario planning, historically, most organizations are building one budget that'll guide you over the next 12 months, similar to what Leslie also just mentioned. But the reality is that funding changes, program activity shifts, economic conditions evolve, and priorities might need to just be adjusted throughout the year based on outside circumstances. So scenario planning will help prepare for these possibilities. So you should start with your baseline. This will be your most realistic expectation for revenue and expenses, your staffing, your programming. This is often zero-based budgeting. So this is where your revenue equals your expenses. So you have a zero baseline or net income. And then you're starting with a new budget year over year from square one. And then this is also the budget that your board would typically approve. So this is a good starting place for building your budget. But then another option would be to create two or three alternative versions, such as your best case scenario. So that could be higher revenue with stronger fundraising or more grant approvals. Think of this as your strategic investment case. What would the budget look like if we expanded or launched something new with these additional revenues? And then think of your conservative or your worst case, where maybe revenue is lower, you have delayed timing or increased cost. So these scenarios are typically internal and not board approved, but occasionally the board may be looking at and approving these scenarios if you've got significant budget changes throughout the year. So with these different scenarios, you can model side by side and clearly be able to answer questions like, if revenue comes in lower than expected, what costs can we scale back on without sacrificing mission impact? Or if we receive additional funding mid-year, which programs are aligned and ready to grow? The goal with the scenario planning isn't to predict the future, it's to be decision ready and flexible throughout the year. So leadership and all of the budget owners, you'll be able to say, if this happens, here's what we'll do. So it'll reduce your stress throughout the year because you've already done the thinking before the pressure hits. And so this turns your budgeting into a strategic conversation, not just an exercise as something pops up.
And Hannah, we often get asked, like, because the board approved the base case budget, which is like baseline, what revenue are we expecting? And therefore, what expenses are we pre-approved to spend? And we often get asked, well, now we're in the best case scenario mode, like the green, or now we're doing scenario three. Do we have to go back and get board approval again? It depends. Usually not. Usually you have the flexibility, if revenue permits, to go into new initiatives without board approval, but it really depends on your board and what the expectations are and how like big the shift is in the scenario. So if it's millions of dollars in new funding that you received and you need to strategically like earmark it somewhere, yeah, maybe you would go back to the board. But if it's just a slight shift in scenario because something didn't come through and maybe you're scaling down, you can run it by your treasurer, your finance committee to see if they think that it should go to the full board and take it from there. But it's a very common question. We have some CEOs that like to go to the board to get approval on every iteration of the budget and every projection that they're doing, and that may be too much. So,
yeah, thanks for adding that. So now we can talk about ownership of budgets. When only the finance team builds the budget, it often feels like an assignment rather than a commitment. But when you bring in budget owners like department heads or program managers, they can help create their numbers and they understand how and why those numbers were built. So this will help ultimately drive accountability as people are spending within their departments or programs, and it empowers them to monitor and make informed decisions throughout the year as things come up. So this will help shift the mindset of the budget owners, department heads, program owners, whatever we want to, you know, all the budget users. So it'll shift their mindset from finance told me my budget to this is my budget and I'm responsible for the results. Many organizations still budget in silos where one person per department or even one person for the whole company is building the budget. So that limits your insight and buy-in ultimately. But the best budgets are going to be collaborative. So each contributor, whether it's the program lead, the finance analyst, project manager, they can bring value and knowledge to the table when building the budget. So what this could look like in practice is your program teams forecast grant or event spending. They know what's upcoming in their programmatic areas throughout the year, and so they're able to contribute what they expect to be spending. And then finance can review the assumptions and ensure consistency across all of the different programmatic areas. And then leadership can align the resources with the strategic priorities and make sure that everything is rolling up nicely. And then we'll move on to the use of technology. So this is where the budgeting process can become easier, faster, and more collaborative. Many organizations are still using static spreadsheets. And while that's useful, there can be challenges with this. So one of the most common ones that we see is multiple budget versions floating around. Different file names like final version, final version, final V3, final updated. And then you never know what your final actually is. So we can use technology to help avoid that, help to avoid data entry and broken formulas, delay waiting for contributors to send updates through things, and the lack of visibility throughout the year. So technology will shift you from manual to strategic budgeting, static to dynamic, once a year to continuous management. And it also enables a culture where everyone can see, understand, and take responsibility for their part of the financial picture. So a lot of the modern budgeting systems that are out there will provide a centralized planning environment to allow multiple contributors to enter and update their own budgets at the same time. So this will be your different department owners, your project owners. They can be in there and entering their portion of the budget that'll all roll up into real-time consolidation without any copying, pasting, merging spreadsheets that everybody is sending you from their different departments. And then you can also do scenario planning built in. So you can continuously switch between your different budget versions and see where you're at. Ideally, you would have a budgeting system that has a direct integration with your accounting system. So as Leslie mentioned at the beginning, you want your actuals to flow into your accounting system or your budget to flow into your actuals. So that way you're budgeting with the account groups that your accounting system has in the different dimensions. So that way you're easily able to report on this throughout the year and monitor your budget based on how you're actually accounting for your expenses. A lot of these systems also have dashboards that'll help visualize your spending and your variances. This ties into that continuous monitoring so that people can be in the system in real time, see how they're doing and own their budgets throughout the year. Some of these systems also allow you to communicate and leave notes as to why you're budgeting, so you can leave a trail, restrict user access to just their portion of their budget. So you may want your department heads to only see their department, and you can do that in a lot of these systems. Maybe you don't want everybody to see personnel and salary information, so you can restrict that so only HR or operations or whoever it should be can see that information. And then the big thing with these systems will also be the ability to budget with more dimensions. Nonprofits, a lot of you guys are in Sage Intacct, which allows for numerous dimensions that are hard to budget for in Excel because you almost become three-dimensional. And so these systems will allow you to budget to utilize all of your dimensions. So we like systems such as Marta Solutions, Giraffe, and Velixo that help solve all of these issues. So the key with technology in your budgeting is to help change it from a manual process to a strategic advantage. And remember that a good budget doesn't predict the future perfectly. It just helps build the capacity to adapt when the future inevitably changes. The end goal should be to approach budgeting as not a once a year event, but an ongoing collaboration without truly never not being in a budget cycle. That way you can have the right tools at your hand at all times.
And think of how much time you save dealing with all those issues, which I think I was getting budgeting flashbacks as you were speaking, Hannah. Like, you send your Excel files out and then people send them back to you, but they've made changes, you know, like they've changed the GL accounts or they've changed the dimensions. And instead of spending all your time fixing things like that, you can use that time for analysis and use it for management decision making.
Yeah, usually the learning curve of learning a new budgeting tool outweighs the costs of Excel. So with that, I think we have our next polling question. What tool do you guys use for budgeting right now? Are you using Excel or Google Sheets or some other spreadsheet? Are you using budgeting directly in QuickBooks or your accounting software? Or are you using a budgeting app or other, or you don't know?
And there's so many budgeting apps on the market. There's actually tons, and a lot of them are specifically for nonprofits. Most of them are actually pretty solid. I hear good things. If anyone here is using a budgeting app that they want to share what it is, you could put it in the chat and we can share with others if you want to endorse it. We haven't looked at them all. We do continuously demo these to see which ones we want to use for our nonprofits that we work with. Someone put in here, Martis is great. Martis integrates really well with Sage Intacct and QBO. So if you're in Sage or QBO, I know that's our go-to. But again, there's so many out there. I knew Google Sheets would be the top, Hannah.
How a lot of our clients are budgeting, which there's nothing wrong with that, but there's ways that you can be strategic and move things forward.
Yeah. And for some organizations, it's fine. But I'm actually enthralled by the 33%. I think that's higher than I expected to see for a budgeting app. And that gives me a lot of hope.
And Hannah, someone asked if the budgeting tools include compensation planning.
Yeah, so a tool like Martis, which it sounds like several of you guys are using, has a whole personnel section. And so, again, you can hide that from anybody who shouldn't see it, but you can go in there and play with personnel assumptions. So that would probably be a good tool to use.
Yeah, I think most budgeting tools, some of them might not have it on the lowest tier, but either the middle or the higher tiers, it includes like a workforce planning section. But it's a good thing to ask if you're demoing budgeting apps. And I see the question about NetSuite. I have research on this. I don't know them offhand, but we can send you budgeting apps that might work with NetSuite, or you can ask whoever implemented NetSuite for you. They probably also know which budgeting tools integrate.
But moving from NetSuite to QBO, any of the apps that we mentioned, so Martis, we really like that one for our clients, and then Giraffe and Velixo are also good options.
Yeah. And Martis might also integrate with NetSuite. I'm not sure. Possibly. So thank you for the questions there. We're going to move now into calculating your budget. So getting more into the numbers. We wanted to bring up this cash or accrual thing. Also because a lot of you don't even know if your budget's on a cash or accrual basis. Sometimes this comes up when you're monitoring it and then all of a sudden, like a weird transaction comes up and you're off from budget, and then you ask the accountants why, and it's like, oh, well, your budget's on an accrual basis and this is cash, or vice versa. So you didn't even think of it when you were planning your budget. So the first thing is understand what basis you're budgeting on. We would recommend accrual basis for your board-approved annual budget because that's the basis that your books are on. So when you're running budget versus actuals, you're not just going according to your chart of accounts, which we've said multiple times, you've got to budget according to how you're tracking things in accounting. That also includes the accounting basis. So you're doing accrual basis accounting, your accrual basis budget will line up with that. And it'll also lead you to like the surplus or deficit that you're targeting for GAAP accrual basis. Not to say that a cash basis budget is not important. That's obviously critical, especially if you don't have like large cash reserves where you're not thinking about your cash balance week to week or month to month. It's just typically a different kind of budget. Mostly we see is accrual basis for the board budget and the projections, but then there's some sort of cash basis budget that's like the living and breathing thing that you're tracking throughout the year. Some of you, it's weekly if cash is tight. Most of you, it's monthly, but it could even be a quarterly or annual, just something showing like, here's opening cash, here's all the activity that we're expecting, and here's closing cash, because you can't lose sight of that if you're doing accrual basis budgeting.
I was just going to say, you can also take an accrual basis budget. And one of the things I've done is right below it, take out the non-cash items and you can convert it to a cash-based budget that, again, like Eleanor said, that's not necessarily what your board approves. And you want what your board approves to kind of be the same as the accounting they're going to see, because you don't want 100 questions coming back for variances that are just based on that. But you can pretty easily usually take an accrual budget and just convert it to cash to give you sort of a basis to work from.
Yeah, and also to give the board comfort that like what they're approving also keeps you healthy from a cash perspective. But when we talk about accrual basis, it doesn't have to be pure accrual basis. And these are the orange bullets you see here. The budget does not have to be according to GAAP, right? That's not what's going in your audit. It's not going in your 990. So it's your internal basis of how you're budgeting. So use accrual basis for the numbers, but we often see modifications that just make it more practical. So because just an accrual basis budget that's like purely GAAP might not get you the level of monitoring that you need. So the common modifications that we see, which I'll call out here, are these four. There's probably more, and I would love to hear in the chat. If we were in the room, I'd probably say, who has other modifications, and let's hear from you. But you could put it in the chat. The biggest one is carryover funds. So you've raised all this money, let's say in 2025, or you have grants, and you have a surplus. It's not like use it or lose it. You could use it next year. So you're budgeting to use those funds that you already recognized as revenue in a prior year. That's what's typically called carryover funds. Multi-year grants, similar concept. Just wanted to call it out because these are actually grants that are time or purpose restricted, where for GAAP, let's say you got $1 million grant that's payable over 2 years and it's unconditional. So you got $500,000 this year and you're getting $500,000 next year. For GAAP, that full million might need to be in revenue this year, but you can't spend it. So you can't budget for that second $500,000 to be spent this year. So maybe you'd have a line item in next year's budget that's like multi-year grants. But it's a similar concept to carryover. It's just talking more about those restricted grants that we see with so many C3s in particular. Reserves is another thing. So if you're trying to build a reserve or you fund it a certain amount every year, that's not an expense, but it means that you need to end up with a surplus so that you could pull that into a reserve. So you need your revenue to be higher than your expenses. Then you have a little bit left over, however much it is, and that's what you're saving for your rainy day fund or like a capital reserve, whatever type of reserve it is. You might write that in as a line item in your budget to show the board, here's our revenue, here are our expenses, and here's reserve funding. So again, it's another modification to accrual basis. And then the last one here, which might actually be the trickiest, is capital expenditures. This is whether you're budgeting for a depreciation expense or the cash purchase of capital expenses. Like, let's say you're buying a van next year for some program that you have. On an accrual basis, the van is going on a balance sheet, but and then you're going to depreciate it over its useful life of a couple years. But that's cash out the door. So you have to budget somehow for the purchase of that van. And the question is, how are you going to do it? I'm giving you a question here because there's a couple different ways to do it. And so maybe you all have the answers. What we commonly see is budgeting for depreciation on some like below the line level. And also, like Leslie said, doing a write-in where you've got your accrual basis budget, but then here are the big cash things that are not reflected above, but we have to budget for them. So maybe you would put it somewhere below the line. But just be careful with that distinction between, are we budgeting for depreciation and amortization, or are we budgeting for the capital purchase? So you don't want to double count those. We'll do one illustration here on the carryover funds because we get asked about it so much. We thought it was worth like diving in with just a sample of how this might work. So number one, what do we mean by carryover funds? So you could see on the left here in A in the budgeting section, you've got your 2025 actuals where you had 2.6 million in revenue and 1.5 million in expenses, leaving you with a surplus of 1.1 million. And some of it's probably restricted, some of it's unrestricted. The 1.1 million is money that you want to use in 2026. Maybe it came from like an end of year appeal in December or a gala that you had at the end of the year. You didn't get to use it this year, so you want to use it next year. So in this scenario, you could see where that blue arrow is pointing. It's written in as carryover revenues that are penciled into the 2026 budget. So 895,000 of the 2025 surplus is going to be used in the 2026 budget to balance it out. So now in 2026, we're budgeting responsibly for 3.5 million in revenues that are available to spend and 3.5 million in expenses. So you're that's zero-based budgeting, like Hannah pointed out. We put a gap surplus deficit line at the bottom because that's the caution here. Even though you're making these modifications, you always want to keep track of like, okay, but what does this look like on our gap basis trial balance? Because that's what's going to show on your audit and your 990. So if you were to pan out and this whole budget were to come to life, the 3.5 million revenue, 3.5 million in expenses, at the end of the year, your 990 and your audit are going to show a deficit of 895,000. Anyone who's reading those can understand that that's funded by prior year carryover. If you see like total net assets and you're a sophisticated financial statement user, but for some organizations, if that's a red flag and they don't want to show a deficit, then maybe they wouldn't budget this way. But the point is to always monitor that. So that's the budget concept. Then if you move over to the right, how do we report on this? And this gets easier or harder depending on the accounting system you have. So like with Sage Intacct, we have very customized reporting and rows that we can add in so that you are tracking carryover without impacting the GAAP trial balance. In QuickBooks, we have ways to do it, not as easy. Other systems, I'm not sure. So some of you might just leave it off the books. We budgeted for carryover. We're doing budget first actuals. Either we'll write it in an Excel or we won't report on it because we don't want to muddy up our GAAP accrual basis numbers. Fine. But if you are to report on it, there's just a suggestion here that's one of like many options. So in the top report, you see 2026 year-to-date actuals versus your 2026 budget, where you're showing all your normal activity. And then there's a row for carryover where you're showing that 895K was also being used in 2026 and it was budgeted. So you're reflecting on it there. And again, you're showing your net surplus, but what's your GAAP net surplus deficit?
So Eleanor, we got a question for the carryover. What natural account would the carryover revenue be aligned with? So what we typically do is we will create an additional GL account, so a new account for this, where we can put the budgeted numbers to that account, and then we can always book an entry similar to what Eleanor was saying, so that you show things aligning. This is optional. You could always put it somewhere else, but that extra account just allows you to break it out and clearly see it in your reporting.
Right. But Veronica, remember, it's not included in your GAAP accounting. So you don't have to worry too much about what natural account it is, because it's not going to be audited. It's not in your financial statements. It's really more a management reporting number.
Yeah. And it's another reason to break it out into a separate account so that it's not muddying up your real accrual basis accounting. So you might be asking, what are the debits and credits? We actually usually create two new accounts. One is the carryover revenue, like non-GAAP, and one is an offsetting account that's also a revenue account, so that if you run the trial balance, one's positive and one's negative, and then you're only using it for reporting purposes. If you're depending on your accounting system, that may or may not be practical. So that's why we keep saying that. But if you're using Sage Intacct, it's very much doable, because you have like different sets of books that you can use and different report groups, so that you could book carryover in its own special account and then in an offsetting account, and have the board reports show like what you see in the top box here. One word of caution though, which is what you see in the bottom box: careful with year-over-year comparisons. So if you're showing 2026 actuals and you're showing carryover revenue, and you're also showing 2025 actuals, you might be double counting, right? Because you were using the revenue that you earned in 2025. So in this example here, we just take them out completely. But we have some C3s we work with that actually they adjust for it in both. So in 2025, they did a carryover entry, and in 2026, and then they could really see what carryover they're using. So it all depends on how specifically you want to track this. There's another question here: if the additional account is non-reporting, it depends on the accounting system and how you're building it out. I would say the credit account, which is where you're going to show carryover revenue, is reporting. But then the offset, where you're saying, no, that should be zero, that's a debit, maybe that's non-reporting, so it doesn't show up in the reports. But if you run a trial balance, it's there. So hopefully that makes sense.
Yeah, that gets tricky with how you want things to show in your financials, if you want net assets to tie or not. It gets tricky. So a lot of it is more just for your internal reporting purposes than external.
Yeah. And I'm not surprised at all the interaction here with carryover. This is how it works in real life too. There's so many questions over, also from the board, where they're like, I see a carryover line, what is that? And then you have to explain it in board language and decide how you're going to report on it internally. So we gave a few different options there. If anyone's left head scratching, just reach out to us. We could show you like examples of how we do it for the nonprofits that we do this for. In terms of the next step here, when we know if we're doing cash or accrual basis, we're going to use carryover and multi-year grants in a certain way and capital expenditures. When you start with your numbers, we want to always start with revenue, with very few exceptions that I can think of. The reason for this is because if you budget for your expenses first, you put everything out there that's on your wish list and your staff and your rent and build that expense budget. And then the revenue comes next, and magically it matches what your expenses were. So it's almost like you're manipulating the revenue budget to get to a zero bottom line. If your fundraising is that successful, great. But if you just put it in there to equal your expenses, that could be dangerous. So the responsible way, and like the traditional budgeting method for zero-based budgeting, is revenue comes first. And what you want to do is go back to that visual that Hannah laid out with the base case versus best case and worst case. For our base case revenue, just decide how much are you going to put in from your like reliable revenue bucket, your probable or your opportunistic. So reliable revenue is anything that you know is in the bag. You have grants that are signed or that are multi-year. You have contracts that are active, membership dues that recur, just those usual things that you can rely on. Maybe you'll budget for 100% of those. Some of you might even budget for less than 100%. You say it's reliable, but we'll only do 90%. Then it's the probable, so like that middle level of comfort with revenue. So grants that you applied for that may or may not hit, the gala could be up or down depending on who the honoree is, or if there's a pandemic or whatever else might affect your gala. major gifts that typically recur, but you don't know like what the economy will bring, or if the person is not going to renew next year, or they might renew at a higher level or lower level. So it's, this is basically about mapping out your revenue into these three buckets with like how much can you rely on them, and then doing the math of what are you going to include in that base case budget. So reliable is usually included 100%. And you might also want to bring in some of your probable revenue. Maybe you would say, okay, here's everything that added up in the probable column. Let's do those at 20% or 50%. That depends on your like how risky these are, and like what your appetite is to budget based on whether those are coming in. So you could do it based on percentages, or you could do it based on line items. So maybe like the gala, you would apply maybe a higher percentage if it's typically successful and you know what it might bring in, include it, but maybe not at 100%. And then opportunistic, maybe you would put in at zero. These most likely are your scenarios where if anything in this opportunistic, like aspirational column hits, then you're going to go to a different scenario. Maybe you could hire more people or open another location. Like it's not part of your base case. We're tracking it, and it's out there, but it's not part of the base case budget. And the other common thing we see is that you could have development goals, you probably should, that are more aspirational than what's in your base case budget. So for development, you might have all three of these columns and that's their budget of like what their development goals are, but it doesn't mean you're going to budget for them. You can't necessarily rely on all of it for the expenses that you need to pay. In terms of expenses, this is where you want to go back and think, okay, what are your goals for next year? Do you have a strategic plan? What's going on programmatically? Do you have any new initiatives? So just doing a little bit of an exercise of like, before we look at the numbers, what's changing? And then when you have that, if there are things that are changing, you're not staying totally steady, what's the impact on expenses? So you have like your personnel category, which is probably your biggest line item. Do we have new hires that are stemming from these programs that are stopping or starting terminations? Do we have any other like impact on certain budget buckets? Like maybe you have an advocacy team and everything's staying the same there. So their budgeting strategy for those budget owners is to take historical data and just review it and everything's staying status quo, maybe with a little bit of COLA raises or something else. But then a different team, like the housing team, for example, if you have a programmatic team, maybe their budget is dramatically changing. You're opening locations and you're closing another one. So maybe they would take a different approach where the historical data is useful as a starting point, but you need to account for those things. So just having like that strategy of like based on your goals, what's going to change in your budget is a good way to start on your expenses. We spoke about personnel budgeting a few times, including with the technology. There's always this question with personnel and also subscriptions, like who owns that budget? Are you dispersing it to the budget owners where they're budgeting for their personnel and raises and hires and terminations, or is it centralized? Typically personnel is centralized, and same with things like subscriptions and maybe rent, even though it's like dispersed to programs from a cost perspective, the budget for it is typically centralized with like the operations or HR team. So that's very normal. And then there's that collaboration process. So we have our revenue that we're relying on for our base case budget. Here are the expenses that everyone sketched out. Hopefully it'll all equal out. If it doesn't, to do some work to make some cuts. We have a little warning here about the dividing by 12. It's very common because usually you do all this work budgeting and you didn't do it by month and then it's time to start the year. So, you know, just divide it by 12 and we'll go from there. The danger there is the seasonality of things. So let's say most of your fundraising happens with like year-end appeals in December and maybe a fundraising gala at the end of the year or Giving Tuesday. Well, your expenses are all happening earlier in the year. So if you're dividing everything by 12, you might be tracking like really well against budget, but then there's like a big cash flow issue and you don't understand why. Well, that's because the revenue is actually hitting later in the year and we didn't account for that. So it's not that breaking it out by month is going to solve the cash flow issues. It just, it'll give you more of a sense of whether you are on track with the budget or you're not. And then you could look at your 12-month budget month by month with your revenue and your expenses in the right column and see like, okay, where do we need like a little padding and where are we going to get that cash? Do we have it in the bank? Do we need to pull from a line of credit? So we're big proponents of the actual monthly budgeting where you didn't just divide the annual budget by 12, you're doing it based on actual seasonality and what's going to hit in every month. All right. So I know we made the numbers part sound very easy, but it's a webinar. We can't address every little calculation here. So hopefully that was helpful and at least got you thinking about like how to strategize your budget and what buckets to put it into and what you might think about with your revenue and expenses. But then there's the storytelling part. So the first audience is usually either your internal team or your board. Board members, what you're sharing with them is usually more high level. So oftentimes they don't even approve the monthly breakdown or they don't even approve the programmatic breakdown. All they're approving is the revenue in the major categories and the expenses, like a flat high level budget. And then it's up to your discretion internally of like how you broke that out by programs, projects, budget owners, months. Usually that's TMI for the board. There are some boards that look at the full thing. It all depends on the personalities on the other side and how involved they are in like the day-to-day of the organization. So they have a high level focus. I would remind everyone to focus on impact with the board. So you're presenting a budget to them, but it's not just the numbers. Like, what are you accomplishing with this budget? How many meals are you serving with the budget that you're presenting or whatever your programmatic goals are? So you're giving them the numbers, but also saying what you're achieving with this budget. And we're opening another location or we added a van to distribute more meals. So focus on those non-financial numbers as well, non-financial metrics. Like, don't forget that when you're giving the budget to your board to add a little bit of the story behind it too. You're explaining the major drivers. So things like headcount, you know, why did computers go up? Well, if we add 5 people, we need 5 more computers. So what are the major drivers in your budget? And aligning it to your org-wide strategy. So the board may have been involved in strategic planning or some other programmatic conversations. So just making sure to help them understand how the budget gets to those same goals and it's just not just numbers on a page. From an internal team, there's different levels of transparency depending on your organization. Some of you are an open book. Everybody sees everything and all the salaries are out there, everything. Depending on what's appropriate for your organization, having folks involved in the budget, like we've said before, not just helps them monitor it and know what they could spend and not spend without having to like get approval every step. It also just gives you that culture of transparency. With funders, most of you, if you're in the grant funded world, then you're familiar with them asking like with every grant proposal to see either last year's budget or this year's budget or budget first actual. What they're looking at is usually just to see like what are their funds going towards and just the fact that you have a budget, they're assessing organizational health. Usually with funders, it's also that high level version, like I described for the board, where it's just the major buckets of revenue and expenses and not like the fully 12-month programmatic budget. But some funders also ask for project-based budgets where they want to see like they're funding this and they want to see the budget just for that project. But just remember, that's another audience that you might need to have a budget version ready for in your back pocket. And then auditors. So there's often like a fear of, oh my God, we're off budget. Our auditors are going to freak out. The auditors actually, we are not auditors, but we are CPAs. They're not concerned with you being off budget. They're just concerned with whether you are being responsible, you're financially healthy. They're looking for explanations just to see that you have one, not that they're going to ding you for having this like rent be double budget. They, as long as you have an explanation, oh, we got extra funding, so we expanded our office, so rent is higher. Great, checks their box, they move on. So just so everybody knows what they're looking for. And also, if there's a going concern, they have to include it in their audited footnotes. If they could, if they're looking at your budget and they see that maybe there's not a sustainability factor, you might fold, then they have to know about that. And sometimes the budget tells them more of that story. Going to move into monitoring and then see if we can answer some of the questions that came in. Right, so just a quick minute or two on monitoring the budget. So when you go into the next year, if you've followed the principles that we laid out, the monitoring should be hopefully easy because you're budgeting according to what's in your accounting system, and it's not a manual thing that needs to be done in Excel every month. So you want those categories to line up with what's in accounting. Hopefully you're able to pull an automated report at the very least at a monthly level. But for anyone that's using Live Dashboard, thumbs up from us. Your program owners would have their own little dashboards and they would see their financial results that are pretty much real time depending on how automated your systems are. So yes, the bank rec and the monthly close happens once a month, but things that affect expenses, like if you're using like Divvy cards or Ramp or those things are all integrated live. So the dashboards can get very powerful if everyone's able to monitor their spending as it happens. And just remembering to use your budget as like your guide through the year. So it shouldn't be static. The living and breathing part usually comes in with the scenarios and the projections, but you're using the budget to guide your decisions. If someone's requesting like an investment in, I don't know, an extra computer thing that you didn't budget for, do you have revenue to cover it? Was it already in the budget and they just didn't know? So using it as a management guide, hopefully it could be useful to you if you budgeted properly. All right, I'm just looking at the questions here. I don't know, Leslie, I don't know if you saw any to tackle in the next 2 minutes.
We got a question about breaking up unrestricted revenue over multiple fiscal years, depending on fundraising target needs. On the accounting side, someone is taking time-restricted and unrestricted gifts based on the payment date. So would you need to align more accurately to reflect the carryover funds? So this definitely goes back to what Eleanor was talking about with those carryover funds and that cash versus accrual basis. And so you really just have to look at, you know, largely your expenses and what revenue you need to carry that. But you also don't want to be budgeting expenses if you haven't received the revenue. So this is where it gets a little bit tricky with that conversation of cash versus accrual and using those carryover funds and how you want to factor those in. But I don't know if anybody else wants to chime in.
Yeah, I would make sure that you're recognizing revenue appropriately. So if it's restricted but unconditional, then you want to recognize the revenue but plan for a carryover. If it's conditional, then you wouldn't recognize the revenue until the next period, probably, in which case you wouldn't have a carryover. You just wouldn't have the revenue in your budget. So you probably wouldn't have that issue of having more, you know, more revenue than you could really spend. But the way I'm reading it is that it's restricted but unconditional. So you're going to plan for a carryover.
And with that, we are at the top of the hour. We want to thank everyone for joining us today. Our emails are up here on the slide deck. If there's anything we can help clarify, please let us know and have a great day and go vote. Thanks, everyone.
Bye, everyone. Thank you.
Well, thanks so much, everyone, for tuning in today. We hope that you found the information actionable and helpful.
And don't forget, you can always reach out to us if you'd like to continue this conversation. And maybe most importantly, don't forget to subscribe so that you don't miss our future episodes. Thanks as always for joining us, and we'll see you soon next time.
Click the link and follow.